Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Pola, Chase Nordeste. By Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series. By USA-SwimRun.com, cool races in great places. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,806 grants, total $4.3 million. Keep Challenge Athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, the CEO, co-CEO of Picky Bars, the six-time champion of the infamous Wildflower Triathlon. And more importantly, he just did Challenge Roth and finished on the podium, went under 8 hours, ran in the 240s, basically checked off every box there was. Jesse Thomas joins us. Jesse, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I love having you, man. We haven't talked since after Wildflower. And I know you were going
You're going for the
seven-peat. But also you were pretty realistic going in, you know, you're balancing being a dad of two and running a business and having that race back was awesome after being a year away. Take me through what your thoughts were, coming down the finish line, knowing that, okay, I'm not going to win it this time.
It was interesting. I mean, it was still good. You know, obviously I hadn't experienced it otherwise.
Right.
But there was a moment I was still chasing Rudy. You know, I mean, I knew, here's the thing, hats off to Rudy. And, you know, Rudy, I knew because I'd seen him at Oceanside 5 weeks, 4 weeks before. Like, I knew he was going to be the favorite, even though I was the favorite in everybody else's eyes.
Right.
You know, and he's an up-and-coming, awesome, you know, athlete. And then he went over and he won the 70.3 in Elsinore.
It's
a really solid field. So, you know, I was still chasing him and got within just under 2 minutes from about 5 minutes down starting the run. But I saw him at the out and back. He was still cranking along, and I was like, I've got less than 2 miles to make up another 2 minutes. I saw Matt Dixon after the turnaround, and, you know, I was just like, I don't think it's going to happen. He was like, yeah, probably not. And you know, just shut it down. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to shut it down. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Right.
And that's what I did. And so I crested the top of that hill, and that whole, like, last kind of stretch, kind of hard to enjoy a last, you know, like mile straight downhill on the pavement. You know, even if you are relaxing, it's shocking you. But I came into the finish line and it was great. You know, I still had all the same cheers and my family was there and I felt very proud of how hard I raced. It was, you know, one of my better, not my best, but one of my better times still on the course.
Yeah.
And it was a really positive experience. It was just happy to be back there supporting that event again and see that Terry and all the Tri-Cal people and just psyched that they're back up and running.
So when you get to the point when you're 38 years old, then it becomes more about quality rather than quantity. You've got a business and that takes a ton of time. So if you're going to go do a race, you want to make sure it's a race that motivates you and inspires you. And you've done Lanzarote, you've done Wales, and now, for the first time, you went to Challenge Roth, which is only one of my favorite races on the planet. It's there's just something special about that thing. Take me through you get to the little town, and for our listeners, the town of Roth is not your typical destination triathlon event because there's no hotels. I mean, there are 14 hotel rooms in Challenge Roth. There's nothing in Roth. There's nothing
crazy.
There.
It's crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. I mean, exactly what you said. I looked at this year and I was like, I've only got so many years left, and particularly left at,
at this level.
Compete.
At the high level.
At this level, though. Yeah, exactly. Where I can feel like I can compete world class.
Right.
And one of the places that I always wanted to go and I always wanted to do is challenge Roth. And I always wanted, and I thought it would be interesting that, like you said, after doing Lanzarote and Wales, to take a crack at a place that was, in, you know, typically a fast course too, and see what type of time I could get. And so, yeah, so, you know, I put that on the schedule, and you don't know what to expect because, just like you said, you've heard so much about it. I mean, they get 300,000 or 400,000 people out there to watch the race. But you drive into this town, and it's like this, it's this sleepy little town.
Yeah, I know. There's very, nothing there.
Very small. I mean, really nice, you know, public pool and you know, and great places to kind of run and ride around. And so you get that there's, that, you know, why they have the course there. But it'd be like hosting one of the biggest triathlons in the world in, you know, kind of just this little place, semi out in the middle of nowhere.
In Bend.
And then,
you've got a world-class...
It's even smaller than Bend. You know, it's a lot smaller than Bend. But it's funny, my friend Chris Bagg, who had done the race, described it as that. It's like, imagine having a triathlon in Bend, but then the entire state of Oregon comes to watch it.
Exactly. And Washington.
Kind of what, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what it's like. It's interesting.
It's so cool. And then what I love is, yeah, we're staying at this at a homestay, and yep, looking out, and I'm like, so where does the race finish? And they're like, they point out to this grassy area. And I'm like, wait, yep, don't you have a stadium? I've seen a stadium, yeah, in a video. They're like, oh, we build that starting tomorrow. I'm like, wait, you build a stadium? And they do.
It was
out of nowhere.
Totally, yeah. It was shocking, yeah. I got there, too, right when they were starting. And now the grassy area is where they put, where they build the stadium, which is amazing. I think Felix told me just under 20,000 people in that stadium.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that big. Wow.
Yeah. It's grown. Yeah. It's grown and grown. And now they have this whole entire kind of park complex area with their, cafeteria area, their expo,
yes,
their check-in and registration stuff. I mean, it is definitely the biggest kind of festival and expo area I have ever seen for a triathlon event by far. It's honestly, I worked at the 2008 U.S. Olympic Trials in Eugene when I was a business school student there, and it was bigger. It was at least as big as that entire festival. It's big.
It's unbelievable. So, and then the other side of it is just the difference in feel. I don't think they're having a Thursday night thing in Kona where the pros are wearing lederhosen and drinking beer together.
yeah, totally.
It's just a different mentality, right?
It was really fun. Yeah, totally. It was really fun. You know, one of my most kind of interacted with pictures from the whole week was just me and Sebastian, dressed up in lederhosen.
Yep.
He was holding a beer, and I had two kids dangling off my one off my arm and one off my leg. and I was like, this is a kind of a perfect little microcosm of his life versus mine right now.
And what his life is going to be in about 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So, but then the other thing with the race, you've got, you know, Sebastian Kienle, who's a German legend, Ironman champion, 70.3 champion. He's done it all. I don't think he had raced there before, if I'm not mistaken. Or if he hadn't won it.
He hadn't won it. He did his first Ironman distance race there and got second, I think, to Rayler.
Got it. Yeah, so but he hadn't won it, which is sort of a bucket list if you're a German athlete.
Yep.
And Andreas Dreetz, who's also a hammer, right?
Yep.
And then you know, I remember, actually, in our film, in We Are Triathletes, it's coming out in a little bit, there's a Macca, Chris McCormick, talked about going and racing in Europe and racing in Germany for the first time.
Yeah.
And he talked specifically about Roth, and he goes, these guys were riding the bike like they're riding a 40K. And that's what totally took him by surprise. There was no pacing. There was nobody going, oh, I better keep my power under this. They were just going for it. Was it different? Was it like that for you as well?
100%. And I remember I hadn't raced in Germany for a few years. And I remember my first experience racing over there feeling the exact same way. I just got destroyed on the bike. And yeah, for sure, that happened. You know, we ended up having, you mentioned Keeneley and Dreitz. That's two of the best cyclists in the sport. And then
Cameron Wirth was
in there, who's basically probably the best cyclist in the sport ever, you could almost say now.
Right, and he set the course record last year in Kona.
Exactly, yeah. And I think you set a course record at almost every event he's done. And so he was in there also. So I knew it was going to be a power-packed, you know, Uber biker field. And I had kind of mentally prepared for that. And, you know, we all came out of the water together, shockingly, in the front pack. The lead swimmers, Luke Bell, was a late pull out of the race because he got sick. So we didn't really have like an alpha front pack swimmer
right
type in the field. And so the guys that would normally be front pack, like Andreas and Ivan Rania and James Kunema, none of them really like kind of took it out. And so we all kind of stayed together, which was cool.
Really fun.
And then which was awesome and a great boon for me. And then when we got cracking, I mean, right away, Cam came by, established himself. And I was kind of like, going with Cam is going to be a suicide mission for me. You know, I gotta be smart. It's a long race. But then Sebastian came by, just about 20 seconds later, and I could tell he was revving up to go bridge up to Cam. And so, you know, I've ridden with Sebastian a couple times for about a quarter to a half of the race usually. And it usually destroys me, but I can do it every once in a while and run off of it. And so I was like, this is my shot to, you know, maybe get a hard bike ride in, and I'm just going to go for it. And it was exactly what you said. It was not looking at the power meter. It was get up, try to bridge up to those guys. I put in a 3 or 4 minute surge that was just full gas up this. Up
with like, 105 miles to go.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, even more. It was like 3 miles into the race, and it was way more than 40K effort. It was literally like my 3 or 4 minute, you know, as hard as I can go effort. And I bridged up to him, and then there was no like messing around. I mean, Cam was just, I'm going to ride in the front. Sebastian was, I'm just going to ride behind Cam, and I was like, I'm just going to hang on for dear life as long as I can. And Matt and I and my coach had talked about, riding with these guys while it made sense. And what I ended up doing was I rode with those guys about 3 times longer than made sense. And went through 90K in 2:04.
2:04, is that like a PR?
Yep. Yeah, it's borderline. I think I've ridden like a 2:02 once and maybe a 2:03 once. So yeah, I mean, it was right. It's in my top 4 splits for sure.
And you're like 30 watts more than normal. You're just
way 35 watts above my target. But it was one of those things where it was like every opportunity where they were kind of pulling away, I was like, you know, it was like it'd be a big climb or something like that, or a long, like hard flat section. I'd be like, just last with them to the next thing. Like I knew the course, and then I was getting positive feedback from the spectators.
Yeah.
And then when we got close enough, the thing that I really wanted to do, which I consciously thought about in about the 10 miles leading up to it, was going up Solar Berg.
Yes.
With those guys.
Yep.
And I bridged, there's a big hill actually just prior to Solar Berg, and that was really, really tough to stay with them on that. But I stayed close, and then we went up there, and I remember thinking, you know, this is one of the coolest, you know, sporting moments of my life. I'm with two of the best cyclists in the world, in the triathlon world, and I'm 80K into the race, and I'm going up maybe one of, if not the most iconic kind of cheering places in the entire sport. And it was amazing. And then I shattered.
Then you're going, my left leg is sort of numb. My calf and hamstring are ripped. I don't know what is going on. But and I'm only 90K away.
Yeah. It was bad news. I went as you might expect. I mean, I thought I could average about 280 watts, and I was about 310 through the first half.
Yeah.
And which was actually above my average even at Wildflower.
Oh my God.
For the race. Yeah. So I blew up hard. And the second lap ended up being slower for everybody anyway because the wind picked up a whole bunch. But mine was like, I went like 204 and then 215 basically, and averaged, basically got my average for the whole race down to 280. So I was like 30 watts. Well, it's basically like, it would have been the equivalent of me just going for like a 5-hour training ride, really, for that second lap was about all I could muster. That was about my pace. But made it through and, got under 420, which was my kind of goal time. And then headed out for the run.
So you've been doing triathlon now for a while. Had you ever seen crowds like that when you're climbing the Solberg?
Oh, no way. Not even close. Yeah. I mean, there are some cool crowds in some places. And, Kona gets a cool crowd at the T kind of intersection there. Yeah, exactly. And that's pretty fun. But I mean, this is like, you got people 6, 8, 10 deep and right up in your face. Tour de France style. I mean, on the second lap, there was a guy leaning so far out, and I think he was looking a little bit in front of me, and I clocked his shoulder with my chin.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, whoever that is, but it wasn't on purpose, but there are people right up in your face. Yeah. It's crazy.
That is so cool. Yeah. Especially for the sport of triathlon. Yeah. We never see stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah. It was fun.
So then now you're it's payback time. You're off the bike. The left leg is numb. Your foot, your calf and hamstring. But the one thing that people really enjoy there is they allow people to use music during the run.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. A really good idea. It's not like you're, it's not a danger thing. I think it's really cool to be able to do that. Had you ever raced with music before?
No, yeah. So this was an interesting thing. So I had literally never done that. And mostly because it had never been allowed. I train, when I go out for my trail runs and stuff, and listen to music or podcast stuff pretty much most of the time. And so when I found that out week of the race, and I have these wireless, it's a sponsor of mine, Jaybird.
Yeah.
I give them a shout out.
These
wireless headphones. Yep. Yeah. And I had this, Jaybird actually sent me this little MP3 or Spotify player as well, just randomly before the race, didn't have anything to do with the race. And so it was something that was so small, I could just put it in a tiny Ziploc bag and just slip it in my shoe in T2. And I was like, I'll grab it and put it in my pocket. And if I feel like, I want to try it out, I'll try it out. But I made a playlist for it that was 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
If you ran 3 hours, you were hosed.
I was like, exactly. I'm not going to make it any longer than I need it. Cause if I'm going, this is how fast I need to go. And I didn't put it on for the first few miles because there were some crowds.
Sure.
And actually I passed my family about 2 miles in. And I was getting kind of like my special needs nutrition from them. And then, but then we got out to the big canal section, which was like 20K of just literally just out and back. It's a great place to run, but it's, there's not a ton of people out there.
No, nope.
And you're just out and back on the straight thing. So I threw the music on in there and it was awesome. I was listening to my curated playlist the whole time. And I had songs that meant a lot to me, songs that pumped me up, and it was kind of a nice way to break up the race into kind of like a training. You know, they always say in Ironman anyway, the first 20K, you want it to feel kind of like a training run as much as you can anyway, you know, so you're not overdoing it. And that's kind of the way that it felt. And then the last, you know, 20K is survival. And when we came back in, when I came back in off the canal, I turned the music off because we were starting to go through the crowds again, and I kind of wanted to make sure that I experienced, you know, that feeling
right.
of it, and also just be aware of the guys that were around me, and it was great.
So, you also had stomach issues. Did you start feeling better as you went along, or was it something you were dealing with the whole time?
Yeah, it hurt pretty bad pretty much the whole time. And I had written about, I've had this bad sciatic issue that's been the main injury kind of thing for me for the last few years. And my sciatic, like my whole left leg was numb for pretty much the entire second half of the ride. So my hamstring and my calf were all jacked up from that. Coming in off the bike, and I thought that my calf would loosen up, and it just didn't. It just hurt the whole time. There was about 8 miles between mile 2 and mile 10 that I felt what I would say was okay, you know, like pretty good. And I started, I kind of picked up the pace, and I went through 10 miles at about 240 pace.
Yeah.
And, but then it's an Ironman. You know, or an iron distance race, and it hurts, man. And it started to hurt a whole bunch. And even though I was in a good position, I think like at that time at 14 miles, I was in fourth and I was gaining on third, and it was pretty clear I was going to pass Cameron Wirth unless I completely blew up. I still was, you know, by the time I passed Cameron at mile 16 or 17, I still wanted it to be over.
Of course.
You know, I was in a lot of pain. I wasn't thinking about moving on second because Andreas still had about 5 minutes on me, and I was worried more about Joe Skipper, who's run under 240 on this course, because he was about 4 minutes behind me, and I had held that gap on him pretty much for the first 16 or 17 miles, but I was still worried about it. So but kind of just muscled through it. I mean, as I wrote about, you know, the thing that kind of got me through was really thinking about, you know, this is my shot to my career day. That was my mantra, you know, career day. I was saying that over and over to myself, and, you know, knowing that I was on track to podium at this race, to break 8 hours, as you mentioned, to run under 2:45. Those were three big goals that I had for this year. Those were literally the goals for this entire year, and kind of three of the last things that I wanted to accomplish just professionally, period. And so that's, you know, that's why I kept going and pushed as hard as I could for those last few miles, held off Joe. He did claw a little bit of time back in, actually ended up getting about a minute and a half in or away from Andreas.
Right.
I realized I'd gotten so close to second, But I wouldn't have been able to run a minute and a half faster had I known that. I mean, I ran as hard as I could all the way to the end, and then came in and saw my family, went through that amazing
stadium
we described, and was, you know, it felt like a win to me, you know, and it was. It was about as good as I felt like I could have done, and it was just a great day.
Yeah, you come into that stadium, and all of a sudden, you've got this crescendo of crowd screaming, right? And then you come around, and there's nothing like it. It's just it's a very unique finish. There's not many stadiums we finish in our sport.
No, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was, you know, they had all these kids,
the balloon kids,
balloon kids,
yes.
Running behind me, they gave me flowers, and it was just, I mean, it was full gas, full volume, you know, great music, great cheering. You know, Andreas and I poured beers on each other, you know, the huge beers.
Yeah, I know, gigantic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, I got to be up on the podium with him and Sebastian. And as I wrote, I think I won the champagne spraying contest, which was shocking because I feel like I've been on podiums less than those guys have. But yeah, but it was good. It was really, really fun. And my family was there. I invested a lot of time and energy this year in integrating my family into my racing, as we talked about. I don't know how much longer I have, and it's important for me to do anyway. And it was really a huge pain in the ass that they were there, you know, in the days leading up to the race. I mean, it was expensive. They got there about 5 days before. They weren't sleeping. You know, it's way more work with your kid around while you're trying to get ready for a race, and he's asking you a million questions about every little thing. And, you know, but then ultimately, man, it was totally worth it. You know, they had a great time. I had a great time. And the first thing you want to do when you cross a finish line like that is see your family. And it was awesome to have them there.
Well, the great thing is you realize that, you know what, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be doing this, right? 38 years old, the business has taken off, family's getting older. And said, so, okay, this year, it's all going to be about racing and family, making sure everybody, the kids get to see me race. And when you talk to Dave Scott, he talks about the 96 race being the most important one because his kids were there to watch him race, right? Even though he was fifth place. Yep. That was important to him so the kids could connect the dots between what daddy does and actually see it live. So I'm guessing this has just been, it's just been a wonderful summer.
It has. I mean, it's been fun to see Jude, my son, who's now five. So he's just old enough to start to understand it, you know, and, you know, he's so funny. A couple like quick anecdotes about that. He, the Red Bull guys, one of the Red Bull sports marketing people was at the event. They had a Red Bull truck. They emailed all the athletes that were going to be in the pro field and asked them for a song that they wanted to play. That any song that we wanted to play about, I think it was around mile 19. So you have about, so it's a pretty tough time in the course, in the race.
Yep.
And the song that I chose was Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
from Top Gun. Like, yes.
From Top Gun, exactly. And it's Jude's favorite song. And that's why I chose it. And it's just a great song. But you know, so hearing that at mile 19 or 20 was a huge, you know, kind of lift. Seeing them, Jude actually, Lauren, so that you can put your special needs stuff with anyone within 50 meters of any aid station, right?
Oh.
At Challenge Rock.
Yeah.
So that's what they allow you to do. And so Jude handed me my special needs stuff, which was awesome.
Very cool.
He was like really into it. Yeah. And then it was funny after the race. He was like, well, Daddy, you know, you didn't win.
Why did I fly all the way over here to watch you get third? What was sort of wasted my time?
Like, I know, bud. I know. But he had actually spent a little bit of time with Sebastian in those days leading up to it. I've got some funny videos of them I have to post at some point. But I was like, you know, but Sebastian, I mean, Sebastian's pretty good, buddy. You know, Daddy's only beat him only when he's had like flat tires and stuff. And he's like, well, okay, I guess you can lose to him. You're the first American. So that's good. And
oh, he knew that.
Actually what he told me, it was funny. We were all sitting there in all the podium guys, top five or so in drug testing afterwards. Right.
Yeah.
Just kind of waiting to go through all of our stuff. And Jude looks over at me and he goes, Daddy, he's like, you're the only person from Bend here.
You're the only person who's not from Germany here. That is funny. So,
it was funny. Yeah.
It's great seeing this stuff from your kid's perspective, right?
Totally. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and it's cool, you know. I don't know if Jude will ever be an athlete, and I don't really, you know, aspire at all for him to, you know, I just want him to do whatever he wants to do. But it's fun while I have a short amount of time to show him what I did for a living for a while for him to see it, you know.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of that, how much is this almost like a farewell tour this year, or you depend on how you're feeling? What are you thinking?
You know, it's interesting. I think I approached this year with a soft, you know, farewell. This might be the last one. Just with having the second child last year,
yep,
and feeling, you know, I can feel my body in the training. You know, it's getting harder. You know, it's harder. It's getting harder to stay healthy. It's getting harder to do what I used to be able to do. And like you mentioned, Picky Bars is...
it's taken off.
My responsibilities there are just growing, you know. And at some point, I've already reached the point where there is more to be gained for myself, my family, and my community by the success of Picky Bars than there is by me doing basically anything in triathlon.
Right.
And so, you know, so it's kind of logical that I would be, hey, I want to spend more time on Picky Bars because that's where I can make the biggest impact.
Well, and that's where you're going to be for the next 30 years,
exactly.
Right? It's not like you're going
to
keep racing at a pro level 5 years from now.
Exactly. And so, I think, you know, I definitely approached this year at least not with 100% commitment to, you know, this is going to be my last year, but just acknowledging that it very well could be, or at least could be, my last year at this level.
Right.
And I think the funny thing about the result that happened in Challenge is that it kind of goes both ways. You're like, well, man, you just went 7:54. Like, you know, you ran 2:44 off the bike. Like, you're not getting any slower. You know, like you're still competing at a high level, but then part of me too was also during that race thinking, you know, this is as good as it gets, man. And like, and not in a way of like limiting myself, but like enjoy this, you know, and like soak it in, because the chances of you having another like world-class performance where you're doing, you know, I might be able to go back to Roth and do that again. I mean, who knows, you know, or I might be able to go win an Ironman somewhere and that's cool. But that was a special day for me. And it's rare that people get a walk out on a great
terms.
Performance.
Yes.
Yeah. On a career performance.
Yep.
And, you know, having said that, it doesn't mean I'm not going to race anymore. I mean, I'm going to do Challenge Daytona there because they're relaunching in the U.S.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to do some other races, but that might be my last big one, you know, but I'll make that decision kind of after the year ends, and maybe I'll target one other race next year. But for sure, I'm going to start to step back and spend more time on my business and more time with my family, and racing will be less of a priority. That doesn't mean it's not going to be a priority, but it will be less of a priority.
It's always interesting when you look at, you know, Chrissy Wellington, 2011, her last race. She comes, you know, had that crash a few weeks before and won and, you know, dropped the mic. Okay, that was as good as it could get. I fought my demons. I overcame. Mark Allen, 95, you know, 13 minutes down, 37 years old, now a dad. Beats Thomas Hellriegel, catches him like mile 23,
Crazy. Drops
a microphone out. Right? That's there's something to that you want to have that great performance. And to have a checklist and say, okay, I want to be in a great world, I want to run sub 2:45, you run 2:44:52. I want to go sub 8, I go 7:54:38, and I want a podium and I get third. I mean, that is the drop the mic time, right? You did everything you wanted to do, and like you said, now, while you were there, did you find some German distributors for Picky Bar?
we're definitely working on it. We got a long way to grow in the U.S., but we're definitely working on it.
How big has Picky Bar has gotten now?
Well, we've got 10 employees, or I should say eight full-time, two part-time. We'll be around the, you know, I don't mind sharing this stuff publicly. We'll be around the $3 million revenue range this year. Yeah,
very
so
cool.
It's still a small, you know, it's a small business, but it's growing, and and we're kind of, and it's a legitimate business, you know, and we are, we're at that stage now where I feel like we have reached a threshold in the bootstrap world that we can kind of accomplish. And so far, this company is 100% owned by Lauren and I. It's been fueled by its own cash trickling in and by minor investments from us. And I think for me to take it to the next level, I mean, every company that we're competing against that is anywhere close to our size, and certainly all of them that are any bigger, have are backed financially,
big time,
mostly by venture capital. So we're going up against $100,000 monthly digital marketing budgets, and we're trying to compete, you know, with a grand spent here and there.
Well, I know.
You know, it's tough. And so for me, like, I really want to, you know, my goal and kind of vision for this thing is to grow it to be a significant, you know, player in the food space and to be owned and operated in Bend, where I grew up, where I live now, provide awesome jobs, provide great products for athletes and aspirational athletes around the country and around the world. And in order to do that, I think we need some help. We need some financial help. We need some expertise. And I don't think it's realistic for me to do that while I'm also trying to compete at a world-class level in triathlon.
You just can't.
And yeah, exactly. And so for me, it's kind of a cool transition to be like, hey, you know what? I did all these things. I won Ironman. I went under 8 hours. I did what all these different things. I competed at Kona twice, you know, that was great. And now it's like, now let's go take this thing to 10 million, 20 million. Let's get 30, 40, 50 people jobs here in Bend, create 4 or 5 different product lines that are successful, that people love. And that's more interesting to me than doing a, you know, trying to go do another triathlon thing. So I think that's where I'm headed. And I still want to compete because I think it's important for me to do personally. And it's important.
It's good for the business. It's credibility.
It's good for the business, yeah.
No question about it.
It's credibility. And I can go, you know, I can market Picky Bars and my other sponsors and interact with people, write stories and tell stories on our podcast.
Yep.
And you know, and that will be great, but it's, the focus is going to shift a little bit for sure.
It's interesting because I sort of grew up with the whole bar, you know, Cliff Bar, Power Bar. Yep. You know, Brian Maxwell, who started Power Bar, was a good buddy, and you had Power Bar that sold for north of $400 million. You know,
yeah,
and then you had PR Nutrition, you had Balance Bar, and so there was a point there where all those, well, there still is, those companies all sold to huge conglomerates. And to a certain degree, you know, it used to be if I went to a race and the Power Bar booth was there, I knew everybody at it, right? The Prince Brian Maxwell was there, the guys who started it. Then all of a sudden, they got the big dollars, and it was people working 9 to 5 who were just cutting up bars and were not connected to the brand.
Yeah.
That's the toughest part from the stage you're at now to get to that next level is keeping Picky Bars. And not losing the secret sauce and keeping 100%. All that, you know,
100%. And that's, I'm being, you know, we have, there are a lot of people and organizations that are interested in investing in Picky Bars, which is great. I love to see that interest. And for me, but it also gives me the leverage as I'm starting these talks now to be very selective about who I want to partner with, you know, what their long-term vision is, and making sure that that aligns with what we want to accomplish. And then also what type of expertise and kind of cultural experience they bring to the table, regardless of the money that they bring to the table. So that's the process that I'm starting right now. We still got a long way to go with it, in terms of, you know, before there anything is that has actually been invested and we do start accelerating. But that's where we're at, and I'm hoping to find a great partner or partners that want to build this business in Bend and that are excited about that vision and we'll see if it happens.
Well, and you think about it, Power Bar and Cliff Bar, Berkeley, that was sort of the birth of the bar was there, and that made that became a huge part of the success of both those brands is that core.
Yeah, totally. And Ben is a great Ben is obviously is becoming world renowned for its outdoor activities, and it's a huge part of the brand for us to be here. It's a huge part of the draw for the employees, and I think even for our customers, that it's made in Bend. You know, we just had our Life Points weekend last weekend, where we invite anybody that's in our Picky Club subscription service to come out to Bend. We capped it at about 40 people, and they came out, and they went, we started with a happy hour, and then we go to a local brewery, and then we ride bikes, and we run, and we hike, and we float the river. We have a barbecue at Lauren Nye's house.
We'll see that.
And,
yeah,
it was awesome, you know, and it's a huge part of the brand. So,
no question about it.
Yep.
Well, and the hard part is, it's funny watching Goo and watching Kashi. Kashi was there was one point, you'll enjoy this, early '80s. I'm standing at a finish line in San Diego, and Brian Maxwell's cutting up bars. And Phil Tauber from Kashi is scooping up cereal, and I'm handing out Competitor magazine, and all of us are like, we love this. I don't know if we'll ever make any money doing it, but we love what we do it. And you know, and Phil got to the point with Kashi where he was doing the hot cereal, but the problem was he'd been doing it for a decade. And so when he tried to get investment or he tried to sell, they would look at him and go, well, your numbers have gone up 2-3% a year. Why are we going to invest in where's it going to go? And he realized after a while that he couldn't just show that this was going to go from here to here. He had to come up with totally different product lines from Kashi Bar, Kashi Dry Cereal.
They ended up having a huge product line.
And they sold to Kellogg's for $75 million. But it wouldn't have happened with just the one product. He needed to have, you needed to show them that, hey, there's a potential with all of our new products that we can get to here. Because the problem is you can see where he got to with the hot cereal and nobody was investing in that.
Yep, exactly. And that's been one of our big strategic initiatives. You know, we launched, I think you saw it, but we launched an oatmeal on Kickstarter last fall. And it's been super successful. And weirdly, or not weirdly, it's been, strategically, it's helped offset some of the seasonality of our bars.
Yes.
We even have, I wrote about this just yesterday, so it's relevant. We had, so at 1:30, this is a perfect little work and sports kind of microcosm. 1:30 a.m. Germany time, the day after Challenge Ross, no joke, I'm coming back from the after party, right?
Yeah.
And I was, when I got home, I had an email from one of my employees. I ended up getting on the phone for about 45 minutes with our contract manufacturers, with my employees, with a number of different partners, because we're facing an out of stock right now with Picky Bars, where we're switching to a new contract manufacturer. I won't go into it at super length, but we ended up having a quality, kind of a taste quality issue with the last run that we did with our old contract manufacturer. And long story short was I needed to try to push up the timelines as much as possible with our new contract manufacturer so we wouldn't be out of stock as long as we're going to be.
Right.
And so, it's this crazy thing where you talk about trying to do it all at the same time, and you're coming off this.
You're halfway around the world.
Huge high halfway around the world to this low of being on the phone and going to be out of stock and everything else, and working your ass off to try to get it going. But I like those challenges, and it was good. And the reason I said that was that it's good that we have this oatmeal line, because it's helping support this time that we're in right now, where the we don't have bars to sell for another couple weeks, and then also just gives our customers another touch point,
absolutely,
and another great product to try out. So
well, and it's a product they're going to have every morning,
right? It's a,
yeah,
it's a, it's
totally.
A consistent product. So, hey,
yep.
Love talking business with you.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, Jesse, congrats on Challenge Roth. And if you get a chance, our film comes out August 8th. I don't know if we have I think we might have a theater in Bend. I'm not positive. I'll check that out.
Oh,
but
really?
we're doing we're in 300 theaters. We're launching August 8th. 170 theaters in the U.S., 44 in Canada, 44 in Australia, and another 50 in U.K. and New Zealand. Yeah, so it's very cool. It's based on the 2014 Challenge Roth. So it's
totally
really fun.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. It looked amazing.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out.
One thing you'll love, the whole thing with imagine this, since you were at Challenge Roth, that Macca and Lothar Leader basically sprinted into the stadium together, right?
Yeah. I was reading about that. I had not heard that story until I got there, and I saw it actually at my homestay.
Yes.
Macca stayed at my homestay for a number of years.
Oh, my God.
So I actually had a pretty cool, Macca was there, and Cam Brown was there for a number of years. So I kind of had some good,
really good people,
some good vibes. Yeah. And, I saw one of the newspaper articles that it was all in German, but they had the pictures of them,
laying on the ground.
Can't believe that. Yeah, that would be, that'd be so tough.
Well, it's in the film, and that's, they interview both Macca and Lothar, and Macca's like, well, he said, I couldn't believe the way these guys ride the bike. It's like they're riding a 40K.
Totally.
But he said, the other thing is we're running, and we are running so hard. I don't know if I can go another step. And all of a sudden, Lothar says to me, hey, first words they've spoken all day. Hey, Chris, this next section of run, it's going to get pretty fast. And Mac is like, what was the last section? this next section? What are you, nuts? it's pretty freaking funny.
That's funny.
Oh, man, that cracked me up. Hey, Jesse,
awesome.
Thanks for taking so much time and chatting. I always love your energy. I love what you're doing with Picky Bars. And combining your passion and the sport is really, it's what it's all about, man. And
yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And the Picky Bar family.
I appreciate all the help.
Picky Bar family is growing every day.
Yep. We're working on it, and we'll continue to work on it and hopefully do some good stuff. So
you're doing great stuff.
Thank you a bunch for your support as well.
Awesome. Jesse Thomas has been our guest again. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, by Polar, and Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series, USA-SwimRun.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation, our San Diego Triathlon Challenge 25th anniversary coming up October 21st. We will be going over the $100 million raised mark, 23,000 grants sent out over our first 25 years. So come join us. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives forever.